How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. I am sorry I haven't posted anything in 5 months, going on 6 here. There was some equipment issues I had to replace some stuff, and also it's just been really busy 6 months, right? Because I mentioned in the last series with my friend Rachel that I was going to leave the training department, but I didn't. You know, I was convinced otherwise, and I stayed in. And then on top of that, I had to go out and fly more because I had to reach my 1,000 hours so I can get into class, upgrade class with my 1,000 hours. I finally did it, but it was bonkers, guys. It was so crazy how much I had to fly, especially in January. I flew about, I think it was 105 hours a block. That's insane. The average typically is in the mid 80s. So you can assume, you know, you can, and then obviously that's block time, right? So that means that I credited more time, or I was out in hotels and, you know, not at home longer than that. But anyways, went to upgrade training just recently. I just passed my upgrade training a couple days ago, so I'm now officially a captain of SkyWest Airlines in the 175. Very, really, really looking forward to that. But what really got me into finally pushing this episode out was that I met Patrick, who is my guest on today's episode. Patrick is an air traffic controller in Salt Lake, and I've never met him before. We've just known each other through Instagram. And we recorded this episode or interview, I should say, back in September of last year. So keep in mind that if you do hear any time references, they're in reference to last year. And I was in Salt Lake for Sims, and I reached out to him and said, "Hey, can I please have a tour of the facility?" He was really gracious enough to fit us into his very busy schedule, because this guy is, if I'm busy, he's busier than, you know, and I don't even know how he keeps his Instagram page. It's ridiculous. But anyways, my sim partner and I went to Salt Lake TradeCon, and it was amazing. We loved it. My sim partner was starry-eyed, and we were just asking a bunch of questions. We were just mesmerized by the stuff these guys do, right? So I was already a little bit embarrassed because I was going into the lion's den, right? I was going to go meet Patrick for the first time, and I had to show my stupid face with after I hounded him for months. "Hey, let's get this episode going. When are you going to schedule a time frame? When are you going to send me the pictures?" And then nothing happened. So, Patrick, I'm sorry. I was honestly embarrassed when I met you, but I didn't want to bring it up again because I felt like it was going to be like I was going to jinx myself and I was not going to make it happen. But I finally got the replacement stuff that I needed, and you know, I got the motivation to do it because I'm like, I'm not going to let my friend Patrick down again. I'm going to put this episode out. So thank you so much for your patience, guys. And I really, honestly, besides just being, like I mentioned this before, I am not the best at time management, so I've gotten better, but I think I highly underestimated the amount of works it takes to actually produce an episode for the show, and I just don't find a time, and when I do, I don't even have the motivation to do it because I just balancing life, right? Either, you know, the days off that I do have, some of it is wasted in commuting. I'm going to stop talking about it, and we're just going to go right to the show. So this is going to be, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but it's going to be a multi-series episode, this is the first of a multi-series session or episodes or whatever you want to call it, because we did sit down and we were talking for close to 2 hours. And after everything was said and done, I think it was like over 2 hours. So I'm cutting this into bite-sized bite-sized chunks. And so it's going to be a little bit more digestible for you guys to listen to. But anyways, once again, thank you so much. I appreciate your support. A lot of you have been asking me when I'm going to post something, when I'm going to upload an episode. And you probably heard the same response, you know, "Oh yeah, I'm getting to it," you know, whatever. But here it is. And I think 2024 is going to be a little bit more better with consistency of producing content for the show. Anyways, thanks so much. Love you guys. Let's go. Hey, folks from the flight deck. This is your captain speaking. Welcome to the Tailwinds and Sunshine podcast, where we talk everything aviation. I am your host, Manny Ramirez.
It's always a pleasure to have you on board. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Thank you for having me in your homes. Thank you for spending some time with me today. I have a very special guest. My guest is an air traffic controller. He's going to give us more details about his passion and his career in Salt Lake Tracon. And Patrick, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Manny.
Hey, I've been trying to book you for like the last, I don't know, like since January or something of this year. And you have just been, yeah, it's been a while. And I've been trying to book you for a while. And I was like, hey, when are you going to do it? You know, when are you going to book a slot or something? And you've just been super busy. And I'm so glad that you're able to be here today, because I have a list of questions I want to ask you. And I just want to get to know and share with everyone what an air traffic controller does, because I want to share not only a pilot's perspective, but also just what everyone else does in aviation, you know, air traffic controllers, rampers, gate agents, etc. And but yeah, I'm really glad that you're here. And Patrick and I met, and I'm doing air quotes here, we met through Instagram. So we kind of just started talking, and I think we started talking on online, because I've flown a couple of times to Salt Lake. I haven't been able to fly into Salt Lake. The trips that I get from Denver are not conducive to go through Salt Lake most of the time. That's kind of more the West Coasties that kind of go into Salt Lake. And so I haven't been able to go to Salt Lake, so I haven't been able to hear you on frequency or get to interact with you actually in person. So, but we just kind of exchanged stuff, and Patrick is actually a plane spotter, and he has a Instagram account. It's Radar Contact without the A. It's RADR Contact. That's his Instagram handle, so you can follow him there. He has a lot of great pictures. His page is just beautiful. It's like one plane in every row, and it's just a really aesthetically pleasing to look at his page. So I really like that. So that's kind of how we met, and we just been trying to get together, and finally I pinned him down, and here he is now, Patrick. So that's how we met. Now, and Patrick, how did your passion for aviation started?
Honestly, man, it's like it started young. I think I kind of feel like I speak for like the masses when it comes to aviation. It gets you when you least expect it. So for me, it was really young. I had, you know, anybody's read the Airways profile interview, like you kind of see a little bit more history about kind of like where it started. But for me, it was just, I was traveling a lot as a young kid, just really lucky, really fortunate. But my mom was from South Africa, and so we were traveling back and forth between Kansas at the time, where I kind of grew up, and then I was in Kansas City, and we would go back and forth between South Africa. So just remember just being in Chicago, seeing the TWA 747 just sitting outside the window, and just thinking like, man, like it's such a beautiful plane. But I saw the tower in the back, and I don't know why, but it was just like from that moment on, it was like aviation had completely consumed me. But air traffic control has kind of always just been one of those things that was like, I wanted to work in the tower. That was like my goal. I wanted to be in the tower. And to this day, I'm 18 years in my career, and I've never worked a tower.
Yo, wow.
Radar. Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Radar. So your focus when you saw the airplane and immediately just like pan left or pan right and you saw a tower, is like, I want to work up there. That's where I want to work.
Yeah. I feel that's like it's like cool. Any kids, like a tall building, right? You want to go as high as you possibly can. So you're like, wow, that'd be so cool to be like up high and see everything, like the big view all at once. And then it just kind of stuck from there.
Yeah. So, I remember, and speaking of which, you mentioned up the Airways interview. Patrick did an interview with Airways Magazine about 2 years ago. How did that come about? How did you get to interview with, or how did they interview you? How did that interview come about at Airways Magazine?
So for me, it's like Airways was one of those magazines that started for me really young, because it was like, there was no spotting really back then. It was just kind of like if you got aviation news, the internet wasn't really around all that much. So it was like kind of in its beginning stages. So the way that you got your airplane news was through the Airways or the Airliners magazine.
Yeah.
But I was given subscriptions to Airways magazine from a very young age. And that's where it was like it just kind of fed the passion, right? Like you just got to go through the pages, see all the pictures. And that's kind of where it was like that little like light bulb has always kind of been there. It was like half dim. It was like, I'd love to be able to take pictures of planes, like be out there and just watch them. But, you know, as a kid, cameras are a little expensive, but we landed up just through Airways. Just, it's always been a part of me. I've always had Airways magazines like laying around. Just, it was my way of keeping up and getting to see like the different liveries that are coming out and like the special liveries that airlines were doing, because there was that section in the front. And so it was kind of like the exciting part. And then you go into the stories. And so it was just kind of, it was a great way to learn about the aviation like industry and community, like right from the get-go as a kid. And then it just kind of went through as like I grew up. It kind of just helped me kind of build that flat, like that platform, that foundation to kind of just push off of, and kind of helped me kind of, I don't know, maybe just kind of be able to find a way to like really bring like my passion for aviation,
right,
like all around. So it was one of those things that as I started doing it, I have a friend that was in Honolulu that worked out at the ramp. A lot of people know him. It was HNL Ramper on
Instagram. Yeah, I've seen his stuff. Yeah.
So he and I have been friends for a while. And then he landed up one day, just made it a comment just on like, it was just through like my personal Instagram. And then all of a sudden he just was like, dude, he's like, you really should be posting this stuff in kind of like an aviation type, you know, like page, and like be able to share the passion. Like there's a great community. There's like a lot of people that share that passion. So I kind of pushed it off for a little bit, but because my friend H&L Ramper landed up telling me to like, hey, like you should push it. That's where I started posting. I created the account just purely for fun. It was just a way to kind of keep the passion alive. Whereas like I go to the breaks, I go on my breaks to the tower all the time, even before I was doing photography, just because it's like, I got to go look at planes. I'm like, why would I want to go look at and watch TV when I can go to the tower and go see everything moving? I'm like,
yeah,
everything else I do is a screen and dots.
Yeah.
It's like I go up to the tower and go see the view, go see the mountains, go see the planes, get to see everything that's interesting that comes in and out of Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And then it was kind of after starting that, I was tagging Airways just because I was like, that was like my jam. That was like, those were my people, and they didn't even know it. I was like, I wanted them to see that it was like, you were a part of me, like from when I was a tiny kid. And I'm like, your magazines have been through, like been in my life. And so it was like, I don't know, maybe it's kind of a goal of mine. It always has been, is to get a picture inside Airways. And like, it's, that'd be like a full circle moment for me.
Uh-huh.
But I just started tagging him just to like try to get attention, but at the same time to kind of be like, hey, like I'm here. And my good friend Francesco that was that works for Airways, he reached out and we kind of formed our relationship and friendship there, like where he was so awesome, such a great guy. He landed up, you know, saying like, hey, like we want to do like a photography, like highlight your account for like a week, you know, like post like a couple of your pictures. And then he started doing these Airways profiles. And so he's like, I have another idea. He's like, it's up to you. I'll leave it up to you. He's like, we can do this thing where I can highlight you as a photographer, or I can make you and like do an Airways profile, like interview.
Yeah.
And so I felt like it was a more beneficial thing because you don't hear about a lot of air traffic controllers. And he was very fortunate to get a lot of really awesome people on the profile. And I know he's got a couple of other air traffic controllers that have been on the profile as well. And I was like, I just feel like this is a great way to kind of help people understand air traffic, because what we a lot of times see is just what's out the window at the airport. You see the planes, you see the pilots, you see the flight attendants. You don't really hear about air traffic until something goes wrong, where it's like, hey, we're in delays, air traffic's, you know, delaying us, and then everybody hates us.
They blame air traffic control. Yeah, that's a default defense mechanism. Oh, it's just air traffic control, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, they're delaying us. There's a delay. So you guys get the short end of the stick. So that's really cool that we bring awareness to what air traffic control does, because really without air traffic control at this point in time, we wouldn't be able to fly. We just wouldn't fly. You know, it's just like, there's no way we can do it, because we're going to crash into each other one way or another. Even with the advanced technology we have on board, we're just going to have planes running into each other. So we need air traffic control. And air traffic control has come a long way from the initial inception of, I forgot what they called it back in the day. It was not the FAA. It was something else.
I know what you're talking about. I cannot remember.
Yeah, but it was basically initially it was something else. And I think the FAA became the FAA after that incident in the Grand Canyon with the United. There was a mid-air collision back in the 50s, I think it was. And then after that, it was like the FAA. But yeah, that's really cool. So you did that, and they did a profile on you. They highlighted some of your pictures in Airways magazine.
Yep.
And that was, so for you, it was like a full circle event. It was like, yes, this is what I wanted to do. And now it's like, I've made it. I'm here. Have there been other opportunities for you to like share your backstage scene into what air traffic control does?
Kind of like another interview. I've done one podcast with a good friend of mine.
Okay.
he was trying to do a podcast. So I did one with him like pretty early on, like, actually it's not early on. It was probably like maybe like 6-ish years ago.
Yeah.
I ended up doing an interview. So it was like, that was really my first experience in order to like kind of being able to like talk about air traffic.
Yeah.
And kind of give like insight as to the background. Cause I mean, I think the important thing is that people see the relationship between pilots and controllers and that it's not just us either. There's a whole field of people. Like aviation is such a team effort.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it starts from like the very, like down at the bottom, you know, it's like, even just when you first get there, the gate agent that checks you in, it's like, that's a part of the team. And then
yeah, everything,
you know, by the time you leave, it's, I just felt like the more that like we could get word out there as to, you know, like what was, you know, like what's it like to be an air traffic controller, or like what's the job, or, you know, like what, how do we interact with pilots, or how do pilots interact with us? But I was like, it's actually, you know, without being like sappy, it's like, it's a way bigger picture than that.
It's
a much bigger picture.
You and I are just pieces of the puzzle, you know, of everything. Cause you have ramp controllers, you have the, gate agents, you have everyone, you have dispatch, you have ops, you have, even the city, you have everything, you know, that's involved. So if one of those things, doesn't match up, then things start going wrong. You know, there's delays and something, and a lot of people don't realize how important that, how crucial every part is. You know, when you have something that doesn't work, then there's a delay, and it could be a mechanical, it could be it could be mechanical, it could be maybe someone timed out, you know, a crew member timed out or something, you know. And right now, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this in a little bit, but you know, staffing in our facilities, staffing at the airlines. So plays a really important role. All right. So now another one question that I was thinking about when I was, you were talking about the Airways interview was, have you watched the movie Pushing 10?
Yes.
Yes. It's mandatory, right? It's mandatory.
It's like Top Gun and Pushing 10. It's like when you're a controller, it's like, it's two movies, not one.
Yeah. So exactly.
Definitely Pushing 10 has been there. It's kind of like the number one question, you know. It's like, have you seen Pushing 10? But the funny thing is, like, I had not watched it for actually a long time.
Yeah,
I'd never seen it until I was maybe like almost 10 years into the agency.
Yeah.
So I finally like broke down. I was like, all right, like we're gonna watch this, like we're gonna see what it's all about. So
yeah,
it's definitely entertaining.
Yep, it is. Yeah, I saw it. I was like, it can't be this. Like, you know, like for those of you who don't know, Pushing 10 is a movie with Billy Bob Thornton, John Cusack, Angelina Jolie. I'm sure I'm missing some of them, but it's basically about air traffic controllers and the just kind of, it's a kind of drama comedy, I guess you can say. It's a drama comedy. It's pretty funny about the hijinks of air traffic controllers and what they do. Obviously, it's dramatic. I think there's drama, you know, it's Hollywood, right? Yeah. But I remember, like, you get the question about Pushing 10. When I tell people what I used to do in the Army, I used to be an explosive ordnance disposal technician, EOD or bomb squad. And I tell them, oh, yeah, I was EOD. And they're like, oh, have you seen the movie Hurt Locker? And I was like, yeah. And just like you, I had not seen that movie until after I became an EOD tech. And I was like, oh, that's what it is. And I'm like, yeah, that's not how we do it at all. That's a different type of environment, but still this, you know, it's the added drama just for Hollywood. But yeah, it's one of those movies that if you're an EOD tech, like everyone's like, yeah, we watched it. Or some people swear they've never seen it and they will never watch it, but I'm sure they've seen it. Or like Airplane, the movie Airplane, the comedy one from the 80s. That's another mandatory movie that all pilots must watch. Airplane, that's it's a comedy.
Aviation.
Right. And in fact, I found out recently that it was not recently, I would say probably within the last couple of years, I found out it was a parody to another movie, which I didn't even know about. Do you know that? It was a parody.
I did not know that.
Yeah, apparently it's a parody to another movie. I'm like, well, that's news to me. I didn't know about that. So I was, so that's kind of cool. So how did you get where you're at now? So what's your trajectory when you started? So when you were a kid, you say you were pretty young, how did you get to where you're at now? Like, when did you decide to go to school? And what school you went to?
It's a great question, because what I did then is completely different than what you would do now. Mm. So obviously the spark was like started at age 4. I can tell you that much. Like
age 4, you remember? I don't even
knew.
Oh my God. That's really young. Yeah. That is really young. Like I don't remember. I think my earliest memories of that age was like, I think Christmas at age 4. And after that, like before that, I don't remember anything. Like my existence began at age 4 during Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for you,
like, that's where it's like,
wow,
it hits, right? So it just sticks. But I mean,
yeah.
it's kind of like a blessing and a curse, but definitely more of a blessing because it was like, I knew what I wanted. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I had to do. So school wasn't really difficult because I wasn't sitting there like trying to figure out, like I would kind of like go through certain classes and I'd be like, all right, like I'm going to learn from this class, but it's not like it doesn't necessarily apply to what I want. And yeah. So I was able to like basically compartmentalize like going through school. And then, so for me, like when I got towards, I started flight training when I was a senior in high school and started flying with a really good friend as my instructor. And so then when I graduated, I was like, okay, like I think growing up, you know, if you don't really like totally pay attention, you're always like, okay, well, I'm going to go to the, like the nearest university and that's going to help me like get to where I want to go. Reality, that is not anywhere near the truth, but you might be lucky.
Yeah.
But for me, like I started at Salt Lake Community College just doing aviation. I was like, I just want to be immersed in it. I just don't want to do anything else. I just want aviation classes, everything.
Yeah.
I did what I, you know, the normal classes like everybody else, but I definitely had my aviation classes set in with flight training, ground school, all that kind of stuff. So it got to the point where I finally was like, okay, like I know that I can't do what I want to do by staying in Utah. So I was fortunate enough in my neighborhood, I had a air traffic controller that worked at Salt Lake Tracon, and I had a controller that worked at Delta Ramp at the Salt Lake Airport. So I had two amazing resources that basically speak to right from the very get-go to kind of,
nice.
Okay, what do I got to do? How do I get there? How do I make it? Delta Ramp controller had a lot of knowledge and he's a great friend of mine. And then the individual that that worked at Salt Lake Tracon, he was actually probably my greatest resource. Grew up with him. His son and I were friends and everything. And then by the time that like I finally had those questions, I could relate to him. He'd be like, hey, so it's happening. Like, what do I do? How do I get there? What are my options? And so he literally just went to town and just started getting all the information for me. And then I had the chance to take a look. So after all of that, basically what it came down to is the only way to get into air traffic control was you either had to go to the military. And, you know, if you get, I've never been in the military, but it's like, I don't know how they assign like the assignments. It's like, or if you express interest in being in the air traffic control program, that type of thing, like kind of like flight slots or the pilot slots.
Yeah.
So didn't know how that worked, but I was like, I'm going to go civilian. And so the civilian options for me were there was 10 schools. The only way to get in was to go to one of these 10 schools that were considered what we call training initiative like programs. So it was 10 of them. Most of them were associate's degree programs. I wanted bachelor's. That was just a personal decision. So there was two schools that narrowed me to two schools, and that was North Dakota, UND, and the UAA, which is University of Alaska Anchorage. So me personally, I wanted Alaska because Alaska fits with like who I am and like kind of my hobbies and like what I enjoy doing. North Dakota didn't really match what I wanted to do outside of school.
Yeah.
But we kind of had a decision to make, like, well, we know we've heard about both schools, but what do we do? So we landed up saying like, hey, we can't make the decision without seeing the schools first. So we landed up traveling to both schools. We went to North Dakota first and sat down with the director of the program. His name's Gary Bartleson, probably one of the coolest guys I've ever met in my schooling and throughout my career. One of the greatest guys ever, so fun, but knows what he was doing and was so eager to help and so like just excited to see people succeed.
Yeah.
You just felt it right from the very get go. And then you can
tell. And that's, that's a feeling you can tell. I was just talking to a friend of mine, and she works in Denver at the airport. And when the first time I met her and when she told me and she said, hey, I just want to see people succeed, and I could feel it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as like, you can feel like you can't fake that. And it's really such a really refreshing feeling. And you're like, wow, these people, and they leave a really lasting impression on you. So yeah, that's really nice to have.
Yeah. It was 100% that first impression. Everybody's like, oh, you know, the first impression is like the biggest. 100% was. But the thing was, is that impression was backed up with everything that North Dakota had. And I was just like, I remember walking out and I was like, you can't deny what UND has and what like the direction that they're going. Like, you can't deny it. But I was like, I haven't visited Anchorage yet. So a couple weeks later, we went to Anchorage to go visit. And like when we landed, it was just like, I'm in Alaska. Like, oh my gosh, I'm in Alaska. Like, this is where I want to be. Like, this is so awesome. Skiing is so big for me. So it was just like, it's going to be a distraction. Like, I knew it was going to be a distraction, but
yeah,
got to school, or we got to the aviation building out there. It's at Merrill Field. And we had our tour set up, and we went to go visit same director of the program, go look at the, you know, the simulators, check out the schools, see everything. So I was actually enrolled in both schools at the same time until we made the decision as to which one we were dropping. So by the time that we landed up going through the first day, there was a, I'm not going to mention the individual's name, but the director of the program at the time was not, that first impression wasn't there. Like, I just didn't feel it. And he wouldn't stand up from his desk to shake my hand or my dad's hand. He traveled up there with me or anything.
Oh, hell no.
And so I was like, I don't know. There was definitely a pass with it. So I was like, you know what? Like, not to knock him, not to knock the school at all, because they're both incredible schools. I'm just trying to figure out what's right for me. Where is my fit?
Exactly.
So I had this super great visit with North Dakota. I'm trying to, and it's like, as I'm going through the day, I'm basically bouncing back and forth between like, okay, well, this was my experience in North Dakota. This is my experience in Anchorage. But everything for me kept going outside. Like, my eyes are just drawn outside, like mountains, pine trees, there's moose running around, like everything.
Yeah.
It's like, this is amazing. But then there was just, it came down to, we had one, he invited, like the individual invited us to like this class to see the simulator in action, which is, I mean, what every student would want to see, right? You want to see how the simulators work to make sure that, you know, it's like, it's awesome. This is the closest
you get to the real thing. That's how you seal the deal. It's showing some simulators.
Yep. Like, you're selling the program. You're selling, like, that's a huge selling point.
Yeah.
So I just remember, I just was like, I was just so tied to Gary Bartleson in UND that I was like, I can't turn my back. And so I landed up turning to my dad in the middle of this class. And I just said, it's just, it's not for me.
Yeah.
And he's like, are you sure? And I was like, yes. I'm like, it's not for me. I'm like, I can't deny North Dakota. It's like, it's just where I want to be. Mm-hmm. As much as I would love to be up here outside of class.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need to be in a spot where it's like, this is going to benefit me for like my career in the long run.
Yeah.
But it's like, I work with a ton of people that went to UAA, and it's like, they put out awesome, awesome controllers. It's just the program fit for them, and North Dakota fit for me. That's really all it came down to.
Yeah. So. And it's, it's just, you say, the gentleman's name is Gary Bartleson, you said?
Gary Bartleson. Yep.
Okay, yeah. So at UND, and it's so important to that human connection. And sometimes I bet you even felt like, I don't want to let him down. Like, I don't want to disappoint him, because I had such a great time with his interaction that I'm scared to disappoint him, that I tell him that I'm not going to go there, you know, because of that. So when you have someone and you meet someone that makes that impact on your life, I think, you know, you've made the right choice. And a lot of times, you know, and right now I kind of want to veer off a little bit on, especially because you made a really good point about making a decision for yourself, because a lot of pilots right now are going out. There's what we call an opportunity surplus for pilots, because they can pretty much go anywhere they want to go. Right.
Yes.
But the importance of it's not all about money. It's about where you're going to fit, because some people will say, well, the best fit is whoever pays me right now and gets me out of this regional airline, right? Or whatever it is, whatever the case may be. But I had a really good, another good example that ties up with your example, is that we had a friend of mine who is not interested in airline flying. He wants to do cargo, and he went interviewed for an airline, and he just got super underwhelmed experience based on how they treated him and how they portrayed themselves as professionals. And he was just underwhelmed. He's like, this is not where I want to work. You know, he obviously can afford to make that decision because of the fact that he's a captain in a Learjet. So he doesn't really care, but he was kind of trying to explore his options, and just the underwhelming experience he had during the interview, he's like, this is definitely not for me. And if I suggest that if you go and interview with an airline and you feel the same way, where like simple stuff like that, man, like getting up and like, hey, nice to meet you, get up, shake your hand, you know, it's like, even if they had a bad day, it was just probably not for you. You know, that, you know, maybe the universe is starting to tell you something, like, maybe this is not for you, because that feeling, it almost can come across as disrespectful. You know, it's like, when someone is like, hey, I traveled thousands of miles to come and see your program, and the least you can do is get up and shake my hand and say hello, or greet us appropriately. So when you go interview with someone, make sure you interview the airlines as well. You know, if you can afford it, obviously, because sometimes you just need to get in using an airline as a means to an end to get somewhere. But make sure it's a fit for you, because you're going to be there for a while. You know, especially if you're going to be there for the rest of your career, you're going to be there for 20 plus years if you're going to be there.
Yep.
So make sure that you interview the airline and make sure, because the people you meet for the interview, that this should be a very good representation of what the airline's going to be. And I think the airlines do they spend a lot of money to make sure they put those people in place, because they need to put their best foot forward when they're interviewing you. So make sure it's the airline you're going to is a good fit for you, just like UND was a good fit for Patrick. Yes. All right, Patrick. So you went for UND, and how long were you there? So you got your bachelor's degree there?
I got my bachelor. So I went through Salt Lake Community College here and did like my flight training and everything. And then I also got my associate's degree from Salt Lake Community College. So what that landed up doing for me in North Dakota was that because I had an associate's degree, I didn't have to declare a minor, which meant that my schooling was reduced, right? So in order to have like a minor with it as well.
Okay.
I didn't have to worry about doing like extra classes, or which would probably have been like another like couple like semesters pretty much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, they had like the WUI program back in the day, which if it was out of state tuition, it was a lot of money for North Dakota.
Yeah.
But with the WUI program, it saved us a bunch. So that actually ended up just being like a huge blessing for us. Like, so I went up there, I got there in August of, it's a good question, 2004 is when I got up there. Mm. And then I graduated in May 06. So it was just a really quick stint up there. Literally all I was doing was just focused on the few things that I had to do that were kind of like the standard core classes that you had to do that were non-aviation related.
Yeah.
And then everything for me, for the most part, was I did, I wanted to do a lot of flying as much as I could. I wanted the experience, but I love flying. That's the big thing for me, is like, yes, I love air traffic.
So you kind of
be a controller.
You answered my question there, because I was about to ask you, is like, is flying or having a certain, your pilot or commercial or something, is that a prerequisite to become an air traffic controller?
No, it's not required at all.
Okay, so that was just something you wanted to do.
That's just me. That was just aviation running through my veins pretty much. So I got through, and I was like, when I got up there, there was just like some things with like UND recognizing certain like certifications or something like that, that I was like, you know what, there's a program that Gary Barlson had helped create called like intro to aviation, I think is what it was called. I don't remember, but I landed up doing it because the big thing for me was that obviously it was cheaper, and my main focus up there was to get my ATC training done, because what basically comes down to is that I knew that there was a timeline and a deadline that I wanted to be done by, because the hiring was just about to start and I needed to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to add stuff to my plate until it was something I could do on my own. If it was, it's like, if I want to keep doing licenses, like as I go throughout my career, I can pay for that and I can do that kind of thing. But I landed up doing this. They required us to do an aviation course at UND. So that was the one prerequisite that UND did have, is that you could either do private pilot ground school and get your private pilot's license, or you do this like intro to aviation class, which does the first half year out there doing VFR flight, just flying from basically the airport to practice areas, maneuvers, touch and goes, all that kind of stuff, everything you would do during a private pilot ground school, but then, or the private pilot's kind of itinerary. But then halfway through, you switch to basically what would be getting your instrument rating. So they introduce you into IFR flight, like putting you through simulators and everything. And I had an awesome, awesome flight instructor. We sat down right from the get-go, and I just told him, like, look, you have to know that, like, if it were any other way, I would say, like, we'll beat every syllabus to death. Like, we'll go out there, we'll repeat lessons if we have to. But I was like, here's my goals, here's my ambition, here's my deadline. I need to be ready for when the hiring is like, there was nothing official. We just knew it was there.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got through school and was graduated, I was putting myself into a better spot. And he was like, nope, I get it. I totally understand. And so he's just like, if you just promise me every single day that like you'll show up ready for the flight, like that you have studied, like you'll know what we're trying to go out there to accomplish. He's like, we'll go just knock that stuff out. And he's like, we'll go do, like, we'll add on to it, because there was a certain amount of time you had to do for each lesson, right? So you couldn't just be like, okay, I got it all done and I did it in 20 minutes versus an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So he would help me learn more beyond what the scope of the class was. And I feel really bad. I cannot remember his last name, but it was Trevor. Trevor, if he's out there and he's watching this and he remembers me, it's like, you're the freaking man, because he taught me so much. But he was so understanding of what my goals and my ambitions were, just like I was watching all of my friends around me going for commercial aviation, which was awesome. But it was just, I had to get through. So I landed up going up there. So I was up there for almost just under 2 years to get through. And then it was kind of where we go to the waiting game.
Hey, fellow aviation enthusiasts, before I let you go, I'd like to ask you for a huge favor. If you could please go to the platform where you're listening this podcast in and leave a review, some feedback, and some comments. I really do appreciate that. I want to make the Tailwinds and Sunshine podcast your podcast. I also want to give a huge thanks to my friends and coworkers that have shared the podcast with their friends and family. That means the world to me. I really appreciate your support and your subscriptions. If you want to reach out to me, you can email me at Manny the CFI at gmail.com, or you can message me directly on Instagram at climbvx. That's CLIMB as in Bravo, V as in Victor, X-ray. You can reach me there with your suggestions or any feedback. Once again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate the support, and until next episode, I wish you tailwinds and sunshine. See ya. The statements made on the show are my own opinion and do not necessarily reflect those of my employer.